Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
And we're live. So welcome to a Coffee with Karen, cup of positivity with just a sprinkling of woo-woo, where each week we discuss a variety of topics. All my guests tend to be around the holistic arena in some way, whether it's from a mental, a physical, or spiritual perspective, or any combination of those three. So your host, my name's Karen Roberts. I am I suppose I consider myself a holistic transformation coach. I help coaches build their business online using social media without being too salesy, pushy, or weird. So today's guest, well, I would allow Jenny to, if you would like to share with the audience a little bit about who you are, what you do, and share a bit of your story, please.
Thank you, Karen. Okay, so I'm Jenny Hallam, and I'm known as the Mindset Designer. So where does that come from? I work with mindset. I work with the inner self, really, and the inner thinking and feeling processes that allow us then to optimize our lives and achieve success, both in our working lives and our private lives. The designer bit comes from my background. So I started life training as a fashion designer, and art and design has played a very big part in the whole of my life, and it is the way I think. So I'm a design thinker. So when I work with a client, it's very much like it is when you engage in a piece of art or design. You work with the materials that you have, and each time it's different. So I work very individually and very much around who the person is. And then I've got my toolbox, which, you know, artistically it might be all your paints and so on, and your charcoal, and but it's like a box of tools that come from different disciplines: coaching, NLP, hypnotherapy, CBT, and I combine them in the way that's best for that particular client. And sometimes, like it is when you're doing a painting or creating any kind of art, it changes as you go along, because as you do one thing, you discover another thing. And that's what we're like as people, isn't it? We have layers. So you start, a lot of my work has been with people going through times of change, and particularly around career change. So being made redundant, for example. And redundancy is one of those things in life that people regard as a negative in the first place, but actually it can be such an amazing opportunity. But somebody comes and the catalyst is redundancy, and where they often start off in their head is, oh, I need help to get another job. I need help with my CV, help with my LinkedIn profile, and so on. Whereas actually what really they need is the help with how they feel, the help with how they perceive themselves, and their actual understanding that what they have is an opportunity to you know, take that step back and have a look at what's happening in their lives. So although we might start with the practical, it very quickly moves into the core self, the emotional, and the spiritual.
Fantastic. And that is, I think that is what is, what a lot of people have been maybe forced into more with obviously what's gone on in the last 2 years. But it's a shame we didn't all start out from that standing point straight from school, because what we, I'm sure you see with your clients, is people do as they're told, children, you know, tend to, I was a bit of a rebel, but you know, go to university because they perceive that that particular degree is what's going to further their career. They end up doing a job that they, you know, not always, but quite often don't actually like, but it pays the bills, and then they become stuck. So that makes a lot of sense to me. People are coming to you through redundancy. And I get that in the beginning, that might seem really frightening and an awful thing to happen. But I suppose then working with you, then you're taking them back to what they're really, truly passionate about, and maybe building from there.
Absolutely. It is absolutely the case. And I mean, not everybody uses redundancy as the springboard to completely change their lives, but an awful lot of people do. And I've seen some, you know, you mentioned the word transformation earlier. I've seen some really incredible career transformations. Two really memorable ones, a sort of top executive in a technical company who became a paramedic. And, you know, following on with the medical theme, I had a senior manager from a railway company who has become a midwife. And wow. In both cases, those were things that those people had felt passionate about for many years, but they hadn't done them because they were caught in what I call the working trap, where they'd started off doing something and, you know, moved up the ladder and sort of taken on the lifestyle that went with that particular level, you know, so the mortgage and all the rest of it, and felt that they had to carry on doing that. But when life throws something dramatic at you, that's the point at which you realize that all those things you've been telling yourself you can't do actually are not as impossible as you thought. And all of this, I mean, the reason that I do the work that I do comes from my own story. You mentioned children earlier. I spent a lot of years in education. So my background, as well as the art and design, is developing people in that context. I was a teacher, I was a university lecturer, but I was working within a system, and a system that I increasingly disagreed with because it didn't give the emphasis to the individual and individual needs. And it didn't teach the things that I think are at the core of life, you know, like managing our emotions, like, you know, how to relate to other people. But like many of my clients subsequently, I kept on doing what I was doing because A, you're kind of stuck in that routine of this is what I do and what else could I do, but also I have a mortgage to pay and I'm the one in the relationship who's got the employed job, so we need my stability, all of those kind of reasons, to the point where I got really burnt out with it because I was very unhappy doing it. And in my case, you know, I wasn't made redundant. I became ill because stress reduces, diminishes your immune system.
Right.
And because I kept on and on and on and ignoring the signals kind of within me that were saying, you need to stop, you need to stop. And I wasn't listening. So I ended up with a couple of really serious illnesses, one after the other. And the second one was an infection in my spine, which nearly crippled me.
Wow.
And left me, I was in hospital for 3 months. And that was my turning point. That was where I kind of said to myself, you know, and because it's a long story, much longer than we've got time for, but because of the backstory, this had not been properly diagnosed. I had lost a disc and the infection was travelling up my spine, and doctors were saying to me, oh, we'll probably have to operate, put metal plates in your back. You may not get back your full mobility. And I'm saying, no, hang on a minute. That's not possible. You know, when am I getting back in the gym? You know, especially at that time, I was a sort of 5 day a week in the gym person. And they said, oh, well, no, you won't be able to do that again. And I can remember having this kind of, it really was like a big surge of energy just came up inside me that said, well, you're wrong. I'm doing it. I'm getting better. And I believe, you know, this all happened nearly 20 years ago now. But it was that kind of thing of, no, I can make this happen. It's, I'm going to get better. And realizing there was that power to make change within, and also recognizing, and part of the way that I did it, which I most definitely did, I'm not back in the gym 6 days a week, but I'm in four.
Not bad guys, more than me.
part of the way in which I did it was to just go down that route of what do I really want to do? What would I do if I could? And that's where the coaching came from, because I realized that the part of my job that I loved, whether it was with kids or adults, was that helping people realize their potential, helping get people get through their barriers, and that moment where somebody crosses over, if you like, and you see them sparkle. And that can be, you know, a child understanding something in maths for the first time, or it can be the client when they realize this, that block has shifted and they can do that. It's very, very similar. And yeah, it's a wonderful thing. And that was the thing that I said to myself, that's what I want to do. But I wanted to do it without a system around me, without the limitations of people telling me, well, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that.
Right.
So, but I think, you know, my point here is that all of that previous time where I was saying, well, you know, it's too late for me to do anything else, and, you know, I'm not qualified to do anything else because, you know, teaching, all kinds of teaching, it feel like a very closed world. Suddenly my brain opened up. You know what? If I can stand up in front of a room full of teenagers.
You can do anything.
I can do anything. and then once the mind opens to things, then the things start to come, don't they?
Right.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things about, you know, mindset, is that all the time our minds are closed to something, those things won't appear. They just, they're there, but we can't
see it. Just don't see it. And it's fascinating that,
yeah,
everyone's focusing on the action part, whereas actually if they just stepped back and focused on, and you're right, you know, you could go, things could change from your mindset point of view day to day, can't it? You could wake up in the morning and all of a sudden see things differently. Your perception has changed.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show, your perception is everything.
Yeah, totally it is. And I think the process of helping people to discover that, and some of it is, I suppose, is being the catalyst for it, and some of it is actually teaching people about the tools that allow you to do that. And, you know, I love all of it. And I still teach in the sense that I stand in front of people and run workshops, which I absolutely love doing. But it's such a different thing from that being told what you're allowed to tell people. It's that wonderful thing of being able to share those powerful tools, I suppose, that were the things that helped me.
Right.
You know, they helped me get out of that bed and learn to walk again,
And listen to yourself. So you have, you knew deep down that no, this isn't going to happen to me.
Yeah.
And it's that inner knowledge and knowing that you know your body better than that person in a white coat. You know. Yeah. We do you feel that we've just been cut off? Well, like we've been conditioned to cut that intuition off, to not have faith in what we truly believe. So in a way, all what you're doing is, or it sounds to me, what you're doing is pointing people in the right direction so they see it for themselves. I mean, that's such an honor, right?
Absolutely. And I think something else, I mean, I actually used this analogy this morning in a meeting I was in. I took in a corkscrew, you know, one of those corkscrews that you have the two handles on the side.
And the handles come up the sides. And
I see it like that, is that we've all got a cork in our bottle that's holding stuff inside. And although, you know, the cork in the wine bottle is holding in good stuff, often the cork in our bottle is suppressing a lot of who we really are, and it's suppressing that instinct, the gut instinct, which is so powerful. And if your gut is telling you something, it's probably right.
Yeah.
And when you think about all the major things in life, I mean, good example is it's when people buy a new house. So, you know, when they go and they look at houses and they go and you hear people over and over again saying, oh, and we walked in and we just knew it was the right one. That's gut instinct. And how many couples get together with a checklist? You don't. You meet someone and the gut instinct tells you that it's right. And it's, you know, all the really, really most important things in life, they come from, you know, the real heart of us, which is that it's that base brain. It's that instinctive, this is the right thing to do. So you have to let that be. And it may tell you things that are contradictory to what the thinking brain is telling you. You know,
always,
the thinking brain is telling you.
I would say.
But if the gut instinct is saying, do this, or yes, you can, then go with it.
Yeah.
I
always think that, you know, it is when we don't listen. And trust me, I've been here before because I don't listen, even to myself. It's almost like the universe will just go, hello.
Yep. Yep.
You're not listening, are you? And that's when things like redundancy have, you know, you could have stepped back out of that years previously. But isn't it interesting that we, because in our thinking phase, you know, we think we're controlling everything, we're not listening, listening, something happens, redundancy, or in my case, falling out of my friend's house and dislocating the one thing I needed to do my job. It was the universe's way of going, you're not supposed to be going backwards, Karen. Listen. So it's interesting that we have been conditioned. I would say for me, I'm a bit of a slow learner. It took me about 45 years to figure this out. it doesn't have to take so long, listeners. Just listen. That sometimes the universe, and it's having that trust.
Yeah.
That you do know best, your inner, whatever you want to call it, spirit, source, whatever connotation you want to use, knows better than we think we know, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's inner voice. And I think the things that happen when you look back, so when I look back 20 years now to that, you know, it's in the end altogether, it was a year and a half of being really ill, and I'm just grateful for it. I'm really glad it happened to me. I wouldn't want to wish that on anybody else. I don't want anyone else to have to go through that to have their realizations. And you know, you don't have to go through a major trauma to discover these things. But I am so glad it happened to me, because it was a life-changing thing in a really positive way. And it created, it allowed me to create a life in which I can be truly myself, which in the end is what we all want to be. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you don't want to feel that you have to put on a mask and kind of zip yourself into a "I'm going to work and I've got to be this person" costume. And I hear that so often from people,
right?
That's how it is for them. And the other thing that's interesting is that many of the people, from the redundancy perspective, but also other people where something's happened that precipitates a life change, so often they'll say, "Well, I have actually been thinking about this for the last year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, but I hadn't done anything about it, and now I'm going to have to." And you think, right. It's just what you said. It's the universe going,
"Time, hello."
Yeah.
Why do you think this is? I mean, you've been a teacher.
Yeah.
Why do you think this is almost, it's not taught in schools to trust your own inner knowing? Where does this all come from?
Well, I think, I'm careful here because I might get on a soapbox and rant. When I talk about the education system, I will say here, I have huge admiration for the teachers working now within that system. And many of them are fantastic and doing a great job. And it isn't like mental health and well-being is completely ignored, but it's not at the core of things. And, certainly for many, many years, maybe there's a shift going on now, but I think those skills that have to do with discovering who you are, knowing yourself, understanding how you tick, being tuned in to your emotions and able to manage them, recognizing, when for you something is a fit and when it isn't, values, understanding what values are and what yours are, all of those things need to be talked about. And so that children learn so much so quickly if you let them.
Yeah.
When I was teaching, towards the end of my teaching career, I was working with 8-9-year-olds. And lots of people would say, "Oh, well, that's too young to do that sort of stuff." Well, it's most certainly not. I taught techniques, emotional management techniques and goal setting techniques and all kinds of things to those kids in my last class, and they just lapped it up.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember there were some children in that group who, when I spoke to their parents said, "What have you done? They're really different. They're loving school. They're starting to engage." And I said, "It's what they've done, because they have learned to understand themselves."
Right.
And it's, there's no reason why you can't start, working with, thinking about, developing those ideas and what in a way, they're skills, aren't they?
Mm.
Understanding our emotions, relating to how we are, being able to manage it. Those are skills.
Well, totally. We'll just go on autopilot until somebody explains to us why we might be reacting that way, and then we can analyze our and think, "Oh yes, I did that because of that." It all makes sense. And then you then are empowering them.
Yeah, absolutely.
To create change in their own lives, rather than telling them what to do or telling them what to think, you're allowing them to understand their own reactions to certain things, so then they have the power to change. Without that, unfortunately, people can grow up and they can be in their 50s and it's a lot harder to change.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Also,
I mean, it's still possible if they consciously want to, far easier to do it with a child.
Yeah.
And then...
No, I completely agree with you. Although, having said that, one of my big passions, being somebody who's in my second half a century, is that I think there's a lot of thinking that's still out there that, you know, past a certain point, it is too late. It is too late.
No, but we've got to make the decision. We've got to make the decision. Yeah. They're not going to do it on autopilot.
No.
They need to be aware and then choose.
Yeah. It's that thing, though, that the, you know, it's like the cork in the bottle is often that belief, which essentially is what it is, that's saying, oh, well, I'd like to have done that, but it's too late now. And, you know, that's what stops you. If you release that, then it's possible to do anything that you want to do.
100%.
You know, it's like, and the analogies are obvious. I mean, you know, if I suddenly said, oh, I want to run the marathon tomorrow, I wouldn't be able to do it. Because my levels of the kind of fitness needed for a marathon are not there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be starting at absolute rock bottom, but I'd have a lot of work to do, you know, to build up to a marathon. But could I run a marathon? Yes, I could. If I wanted to do that, and I set that as my goal, it wouldn't matter. I could do it now. I could do it in 10 years' time. I could do it in 20 years' time. If I wanted to, if I had the, you know, if I put in place all the right pieces that would lead me to that place. So it comes down to knowing what you really, really want and then making that structure that allows you to get there. And it's amazing. You know, I'm going to go back to my client who I talked about earlier, who became a midwife, because she's still somebody that, you know, she really touches my heart in what she did. She was somebody who, due to her own life story, she'd struggled at school and she didn't get many qualifications. But she'd worked her way up in her employment, which is how she got into senior management. But she didn't have school qualifications, if you like. And when she came, obviously, training to be a midwife means going to university. And when she came to apply, she didn't have the baseline qualifications that they wanted. So they said to her, well, you can do it, but you're going to have to take these GCSEs.
Right.
And, you know, initially she was going, oh, and they were saying, well, you know, you've got this many months. She ended up doing it, and she did. So she actually did her maths and science GCSEs in four months. And she did them alongside her daughter, who was taking her GCSEs that year.
Wow.
And they took the exams at the same time. So she did, she set her mind to it, and she just, you know, said,
there you go.
If I want to do this, yeah, I have, you know, step one has to be passing these exams, and she did it. And everything from then on, it was a case of, okay, I have to get over this hurdle to get to that goal. So I'm going to get over that hurdle, whatever it takes to do it.
And then you'll put in the effort. You'll do the things that you need to do to actually achieve it. It's different when it's, when I suppose what possibly happens, you know, you know, talking from personal experience, when you're at school, you know, if you can't see the reason why you need to get that particular exam and you're not too bothered about it, you don't put in the energy, energy to actually get the good result, because to you, there's no point. Well, I want to be a dancer. So,
that's true. And I think the other thing, and again, going back to personal experience, because of that lack of emotional management, I suppose. So when I was at school, I completely funked my maths exams, equivalent of GCSEs. I'm old enough for them to have been called O-levels. but my maths O-level, I completely failed it. And the reason that I completely failed it is that I didn't even attempt to do it because of the negative experiences that I'd had over my school years with non-empathetic teaching, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I believed
that I was rubbish at maths. Hence, because I believed I was rubbish at it, every time I went to try and do anything, my brain went into terror and I struggled. So that reinforced the belief that I was rubbish at it. So when it got to this exam, rather than, you know, doing it and failing, I decided to fail. So I can remember sitting in my maths O-level exam and drawing rabbits on the paper. And that's because I was very good at drawing. And at the time, I was reading a book called Watership Down, which is a story about rabbits. And so I illustrated Watership Down all over my maths paper.
You remind me of what it sounds like my daughter. I can remember going to a parents' evening and she was very upset in a maths thing and she designed a flower out the shavings of a rubber.
Yeah. Well, you know, we do what we instinctively do.
There you go.
You know, as I discovered at a later stage in my life, actually, I discovered it through teaching in primary school because, of course, I had to teach maths. And initially, I was worried about teaching maths, but I was really good at teaching maths because I was so empathetic to the kids that struggled because I understood their struggle. So I was very creative in the way that I taught things, you know, coming at things from all different angles so that they would understand.
Wow.
You know, that made me realize, again, it's looking back and saying, well, I'm pleased that I struggled with it because it taught me to help people better.
Funny how it goes, isn't it? That's how we get to where we are. It's interesting that we, you know, what you've just shared there, and for anybody, this is just really that, wow, our beliefs really do control us if we allow them to. But a belief is just a repetitive thought. So how amazing is that? But then if you had been really good at it, when you did come to teach, you may not have been as creative or as empathetic to the other students. It's just such a fascinating sort of idea, this whole thing, which really makes me realize that actually it's our failures that lead to our success, actually more than our wins, quite often. So sometimes our wins, we might not analyze them enough to see how we'd even got there. So it's actually we learn from our what is perceived as failures in the past actually don't turn out to be. It's quite a fascinating subject, really.
Yes, it is. And I think when I started off on my new life, if you like, the first training that I did was in NLP. And NLP is, to go into detail on what it is, but, you know, fundamentally, it's a collection of tools and techniques for excellence, working with the mind. And there are kind of tenets, you know, underlying core bases for the thinking behind it. And one of them is there is no failure, only feedback. And I found that incredibly powerful when I first heard it, because I actually hadn't heard it before. And it made complete sense to me that, you know, we are afraid of failure. Most people are afraid of failure, and that that fear leads them to do all sorts of things that are not necessarily good for them. But when you shift your perception, you know, you look at it from a different standpoint, and this isn't a failure, this is something that hasn't worked yet. So it's teaching me that I need to look at doing it differently. And every time something doesn't work, it's really valuable because it's showing you what you need to do differently. And I mean, for the last 20 years, I suppose that's been kind of in my core self, is remembering. And I'm like everybody else. I have my wobbly days, and my days when failure worries me, and so on and so forth. But I always come back to that one. Okay, here's something that didn't work out as I wanted it to. What can I learn? What have I learned from it? What will I do differently next time? And it's an incredible, that word empowerment, that I think is one of the most empowering things you can adopt as a principle, is that everything in life is learning. Everything.
All it is, this idea of, I get it, striving for excellence, but when people lose this whole, it doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to be perfect. We are human beings. None of us are perfect. Yeah. And it's getting over that. And if only everybody realized that, failing is a part of success. You cannot find success with that. Do you know, Jenny, can you think of anybody off the top of your head? Anybody that has not failed and they've gone straight to the top, woof, without anything?
Well, certainly not anybody I know.
No, I don't know anybody. But people don't see that, do they? They see the end game.
Yeah, but they don't.
And want to be there, but they might not know about the amount of massive failures that person has had and got up from and learned and gone again. Yeah. But they just see the end game. And because I suppose also people want to portray the image of perfectionism.
Yeah. Well, that's, that's another cork in the bottle. people are so worried about how other people perceive them.
Oh.
And in being worried about how other people perceive them, they hold back on who they truly are a lot of the time.
100%.
And that's, there's a whole lot of work out there, but people like Brené Brown, talking about being vulnerable, showing our vulnerability. But it's amazing. I've been lucky enough to be on a retreat recently with a wonderful fellow coach. And, I went on this retreat with a group of women who I'd never met before. And we were there for 3 days, which is not very long. Mm-hmm. But in the context of that retreat, every single one of us allowed ourselves to be vulnerable and to speak openly about how we felt, what we were afraid of, and it was incredibly powerful because you just had a room of people being truly themselves. And apart from the power of releasing all of that in helping people to shift and see things more positively, which I think happened to all of us, was also the bond it created between us. Mm-hmm. So I went into, I said to them, you're a group of strange women, which is now what we're called as a group. Our WhatsApp group is called the Strange Women.
Fantastic.
But they went into a group of strange women and came out with some new friends who are almost more than friends because they've shared that experience of self-exploration.
Right.
And it's an incredibly bonding thing to do.
There's more trust.
Yeah, and nobody's, I'm not suggesting here that we all go into the workplace and start bearing our holes, but actually having honest conversations with people and being able to talk about how you feel or about how something makes you feel is so important, because it's when you don't let that out that it does damage. And also, if other people don't know, they can't help you.
Well, right. They might continue doing something that's not helping. When we're aware of things.
Yeah, there was something I found on LinkedIn. And it was a post by a guy who I've never met. It just came up in my feed, and he was brave enough to sort of tell the world on LinkedIn about losing his son. And, you know, as a very small child. And he said, I never told anyone at work that this had happened. So he'd kept it.
Ooh.
Because he was afraid that people might think that he couldn't achieve, and that it might affect the perception of him at work, and he might, you know, lose his job. But I can't remember the actual detail of it, but it was really quite shocking to read.
Yeah.
But you know, how that was somebody being very brave and very honest. But how many others, and you know, I'm quite sure it's the case, and I have done it myself. We hide what's going on in our lives, especially if we're in that, you know, stuck in a workplace but not very happy in life.
Mm-hmm.
So we become performance art, you know. Yeah. we are doing that thing of putting on the work mask and going in and being the person we are at work, and our real selves are sitting there inside, and going through all sorts of stuff. And when we don't share it, all other people see is that, you know, maybe we're a bit grumpy, maybe we're not operating at 100%, and they make up their own interpretation.
Their own story.
Whereas if they knew that actually, you know, you just lost someone, or you had a relationship breakup, or, you know, all these things, it will make a difference. It doesn't mean that, you know, they're going to say, oh, you don't need to do that, but they will understand if you're...
They'll understand if you're not totally at 100%. Bit of it, like you said before, you use the word bit of empathy.
Yeah.
We're not looking to be, you know, and I'm sure some people will, you know, as with any of it, maybe that could be the thing that you don't want to be perceived to be just trying to get out of things, or, you know, you're putting it on. So that can be another reason why people close up, because they've created a story already that people might perceive them for saying the truth. It's a whole thing. It's all this. We end up doing, we all do it to a certain degree, you know, creating stories of what could happen, or what they might think, and what she might think if she heard that. Whereas it's not truth, is it?
No. No. Oops. Well, I think it, you know, another thing which is a kind of basic tenet of life that's really helpful is to remember that there is no truth. There is only perception, because we're all seeing things through our own filters.
Very true. Absolutely.
So, you know, so, I saw a beautiful... again, this happened today. I saw a beautiful illustration of this at a meeting I was at, where lady had a beach ball, and it had three stripes on one side and three stripes on the other. So she was holding up the beach ball and saying, you know, what can you see? So, of course, those of us who were on the far side of the beach ball could see yellow and blue and red. But the people on the other side could see green and pink and white.
There you go.
And so when we were asked what we could see, that was it.
That
is the classic analogy. You know, you only see what you see.
Exactly.
And all you have to do is move around the ball to see the other side.
And it just goes to say, you choose your thoughts. So in other words, you choose your whole perception of life. You could choose to see things as, Well, I don't have a TV, so I don't know what's going on at the moment, but I can sense something's going on and that things are really terrible. And there, or you can choose to see life in a completely different way, then it's actually wonderful. And there's lots of really good people out there helping others. And it's your perception. So we actually get to choose it ourselves, right?
Yeah, we do. And I think if people can bring themselves to that point of seeing that what is true for you, it's good. You can, you know, stick with your beliefs and values, but accept that others are different from you and learn to have that empathy and understanding. You're not asking them to change. They're not asking you to change. You're just prepared to see it from their point of view. And, you know, an awful lot of the problems in the world would go away if we could all do that.
Instantly.
Yeah.
Boom. There's not a problem in the world.
Yeah, but you know, if you take that into the workplace, and you know, something I do is what I call well-being in the workplace. But well-being is, you know, in especially now, people are going physically back into workplaces, and maybe after a long time where they haven't been surrounded by other people, and you've got all the great stuff about that, but you've also got the challenges of that, you know, the factions and the people talking around the water cooler and the what does she think of me, what does he think of me kind of stuff. And it's so important that people have these I suppose core tools of managing themselves and managing relationships. So it's that, okay, again, I have, it's strange, isn't it? I suppose it's to do with law of attraction, perhaps. I seem to have attracted three clients at the moment who are all going through almost identical situations. They don't know each other. They come from completely different worlds, but they're all going through situations where they're working out a kind of notice to leave a job, and they have toxic management. People who are not communicating effectively with them and not showing respect and all of those things. And it's just huge how much impact that has on people's well-being. There's one lovely lady who described how she felt, and she said, I feel like a husk of my former self.
How awful.
And she's somebody who, you know, in all her life, she's been described, you know, as a kind of source of joy for other people. You know, she's the funny friend. But she said, I don't feel that I can even be the funny friend anymore, because it's all been sucked out of me. And that's because of her work situation. The rest of her life is working well, you know, she's
right. It's just that one
work
area.
Situation is sucking all that, you know.
So it is having an impact on her personal well-being.
Yeah.
So what is it, Jenny, that you actually, who are the people that you specifically help?
Okay. I think it comes down to people going through change that is forced upon them. So redundancy is a key thing. But it could be other personal change, like divorce, like a real big shift in environment, you know, moving from another country.
Nested syndrome.
And I think people, you know, I'm mentioned the second half a century thing, but I think it's people who have maybe lost their mojo, lost their passion, feel stuck, feel it's too late. All of those kind of things is that coming back to the take the cork out of the bottle analogy and free, helping those people to be free to move on and create the future that they want to have.
that they and, want, you know, maybe have always wanted, but felt that they couldn't have.
And you mentioned the touch of woo-woo, you know, so when people like me talk about this as, oh, to create the life you want, you know, you can get a lot of cynicism back. Yeah, that's all very well, but, you know, I need millions to do that, or it's, you know, it's not practical. And the thing is that I know, because I've done it myself, and I know because, you know, over the years of all the people that I've worked with, so many people have done this, is that it's not about money. It's about mindset. If you want to make it happen, you can. A way will come. You know, once you're clear. So if you start with what you want,
yes,
and then you work backwards from there. It's about, you know, going with the dream to start with. So, I'm you know, I love working with people who think it's too late, because it's so exciting when they realize that it's not.
Yeah.
So I suppose
rewarding. It's rewarding for you to see the transformation.
Very much so. And I suppose the other thing that's a particular passion of mine is this whole idea of well-being in the workplace, because I think that, again, you know, it's the good that comes out of bad. The whole COVID thing created a lot of bad stuff for many, many people, but it's also given us a great opportunity. It's really raised people's awareness of the importance of mental health.
Yeah.
And I think it's made people much more aware of themselves because of the experiences that they went through, their families went through. People have looked inside more, and that, you know, change in that, in the whole being able to work from home and having that choice and having that flexibility. So in creating what has to be a new way forward, we can't go back to how it was before, because we've had a real radical shift in workplaces and working style. So it's how you take that opportunity now to empower people, really, to make the best of their work environments. And I'm seeing a lot of great work going on in big organizations and corporates. I'm really interested in helping smaller companies to do this.
Right.
You know, where they, maybe they, you know, they haven't got lots of in-house specialists to do it. But, you know, employers who really care about the people that work with them, is, you know, going in and providing them with the well-being support for their staff.
Right. And it's so important, because this is going to be for longevity. It's going to, you know, the companies that don't see the benefit of this, they're just cutting their nose off to spite their face, aren't they? This is for, because people, you know, when we're happy, we're going to stay with that company more. If we're feeling unappreciated and you know, we're not being rewarded for, you know, the whole it's all interlinked. Happy people, you know, happy business, happy life. I mean,
absolutely. People are always going to be more productive if they're happy. If they're in a good place, if they
always, and it's not about, it's funny you said about the money. It's not always about the money. I mean, it's been many years since I ever worked for anyone, but so I'm probably going back over 20 years before my children were born. But I worked in various different gyms. I had sports injury clinics in a couple of different clubs. The one club where the manager just spent probably 25p by sending me a thank you card for my input on an open weekend or something. Of course, I'm going to go out of my way to help that guy. I'm going to work the extra mile for that person with no regard of any extra income, purely because I felt appreciated.
Yeah.
I mean, it just goes so far, and I was happy within that environment. You're going to go beyond, above and beyond. And it's, you know, and I hope, like you say, that that's maybe the, you know, the positive that has come out of what's gone on in the last couple of years. So yeah. For the listeners, they want to get in touch with you. How do they get in touch with you, Jenny?
Okay. Well, like you, I like to have a chat. You know, the best way to connect with me is to talk to me. So if people want to book a call, they can do that through my website. I'm on Instagram, I'm on LinkedIn.
To the listeners, everybody else, if they're seeing this on YouTube or whatever, we'll have all your links down below. But just to the listeners on Mintwave or on the podcast, what is your website, Jenny?
Yeah, it's www.jennyhallam.co.uk. Nice and simple.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, yes, as always, the best way just to have a quick chat to see whether what Jenny has to offer is a good fit. So, but what else do you, because you don't just offer that, do you? So what else do you offer, Jenny?
Well, I say wellbeing in the workplace programs, but also I do one-to-one coaching, leadership coaching, and I run workshops. I have a series of workshops. I've got one called the Wellbeing MOT, which works on, you know, just what it says on the tin, really, is, you know, people let their batteries run down. And this is about making sure, you know, you can't run on empty. So that covers, you know, how to make sure that you're powered up so that you can live your life as you want to and get through difficult times. And I run retreats as well. I'm going to be running a retreat in the south of France next year in May. Details of that, once they're confirmed, will be on my website. Very excited about that. Finally, it's something that I was originally planning to do in 2020, but we know what happened to things in 2020.
Yeah.
But 2023 is going to be the year.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and say there are live workshops and there are online workshops as well. There's going to be a series of online workshops running from June.
Superb. So that's jennyhallam.co.uk.
Yeah.
So to the listeners, what would be your top three tips if somebody was, even if they didn't or weren't aware of any threat of redundancy, but maybe were thinking that, oh, you know, I shoulda, woulda, coulda in my younger year done this, that and the other. What would be your three top tips?
Okay. Number one is take a bit of time out and imagine that you've just received a gift of £5 million. Okay. £5 million should be enough for most people to take that holiday, pay off the mortgage, all the rest of the stuff, so that you've got enough left that you're free from that need to do what mm-hmm. you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then what would you do? And if you sit down with that question and you open up to the possibilities, what comes out of that can be incredibly powerful. That's right. What I did when I was back in hospital. It's a long time ago, so then it was a £1 million question. That's what got me started.
Inflation.
Yeah. So I think that is absolutely key. I think checking in with yourself using something I call the emotional ladder. So if you imagine like a 10-step ladder, mm-hmm. whereas, you know, the bottom rung is feeling absolutely dire and depressed and hopeless, and the top rung is ecstatically, perfectly wonderful, you're probably not there or there.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of where are you in between?
Yeah.
And just checking that in with yourself and checking in the morning is quite a good, you know, where am I? How am I feeling?
Yeah.
So noticing where you are and then what things you can do to lift that.
Yes.
So it's all the classic things like, you know, listen to some music, have a little dance, get out in nature, do some breathing, whatever it is that works. But there's two things there. There's learning to lift yourself, but there's also checking in how you feel on a daily basis. Because if you are feeling on a regular basis below step five, then that means you need to have a look
at what's going on. Change. Fantastic.
Something needs to change.
So
those are two major things, I think.
Brilliant. Brilliant advice. So thank you so much for your time today, Jenny. It's been wonderful, as always, speaking to you.
Totally.
And to the listeners, if you're curious, get in touch. So thank you for listening. I will be back next week with Coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.